Chapter 12. The Mystery of the Blood, Part 2. In the previous chapter, we determined that from approximately the beginning of the 20th century, a mysterious influence has appeared in our atmosphere, which with a steadily growing power seizes all manifested life on our planet. We ascertained that not a single creature can avoid this influence because it is atmospheric. This means that all four realms of life on this side of the Veil of Death, the mineral, plant, animal, and human kingdoms, and the four life domains in the beyond, the etheric sphere, the astral sphere, and both spinal regions of concrete and abstract thought, are influenced because they need the atmosphere for the maintenance of their various forms of manifestation in those realms. The mysterious new atmospheric conditions grip the all manifestation in the blood and the life fluids, and the blood and life fluids in particular have a very close bond with the atmosphere. Influencing life atmospherically is the universal method to bring about a reaction in living beings. It is a method which the great powers of the reflection sphere and their servants apply also in 1,000 different ways. It is the macabre imitation of the universal Christ intervention, an imitation that is more or less successful in all circumstances. To understand this correctly and fully recognize the nature of the struggle that every pupil has to endure, we shall have to penetrate deeply into this phenomenon. When we do so, we shall understand why the universal teachings warn us of the many false Christ manifestations that severely hinder progress on the path. Now that such a mighty atmospheric impulse prevails, it is more than ever time that the pupil is equipped with as much discernment as possible by virtue of his state of being. The starting point for our reflections is the fact that the blood and life fluids tie in very closely with the atmosphere and feed from it. The atmosphere of our Earth consists of a specific state of the primordial substance, which is the case for every planetary cosmos. All forms and conditions of the chemical sphere of our material world are to be explained from the conditions of our planetary atmosphere. In turn, the atmosphere nourishes itself from the expanse of primordial substance in which the whole cosmos revolves. All this is put into effect according to a specific principle, a certain formula which we can indicate as the planetary consciousness. Consequently, the planet can assimilate from this whole system no other forces than those that accord with its nature. This is the essence of the earthly nature, which is also our nature. We deem the pupils of the Rosy Cross to be sufficiently familiar with the basic character of our dialectical prison. We can indicate the consciousness of a planet or a human being, the consequence of which the whole process of life manifests, as ensouled nature. However, an ensouled nature being is not a spiritual being. We have to see the soul as a projection, a reflection of the spirit. We can imagine this if we analogize spirit with light. A ray of light strikes a quantity of primordial matter. An activity arises in the matter in accordance with the nature, essence, and purpose of the light ray. When the matter possesses sufficient latent forces, hence many alchemical possibilities, then a process arises. It is well to note that this process continues also if the light ray withdraws. However, when the light ray has withdrawn, the nature of the process alters. Instead of eternal genesis in accordance with the nature, purpose, and essence of the light, the animated matter will show dialectical phenomena. Animated matter without the guidance of the spirit is a fatal course, an ongoing death leap into destruction, suffering, and grief, an incessant dying and being born again in ever different stages of fate, a chain reaction of the primordial substance. Those who have studied natural science and the publications and experiments of nuclear fission can undoubtedly form a clear concept of the cause of dialectics. Animated, energized matter has escaped the guidance of the spirit. Throughout the aeons, ensouled matter has attempted with a boundless intellect to protect itself against and escape from a deluge of destruction. Ensouled matter has consciousness and therefore perception. Right down to its smallest particles, primordial matter is destined to contribute to something majestic. the smallest particle of primordial substance is therefore potentially divine. As soon as primordial matter is used, its consciousness, its sensation, its latent life is irrevocably set free. As soon as primordial matter is used for purposes that are not in accordance with the light, it undergoes immeasurable affliction due to its sensory perception, and a cry of suffering rends the universe. In a system like the human soul being, every cell suffers in the entity's course of anguish. Whoever pays attention can clearly read the signature of the enormous dialectical world drama in every form of manifestation. We are called into being after the image of our planetary cosmos. When our world came into being, we also came into being. Then we walked in the light, just as our entire cosmos was in the light. But we, soul beings, living in our soul world, have severed the connection with the light, with all the consequences. We must now understand that the severed connection with the light can be restored, likewise with all the consequences. To this purpose and intent, the mysterious power whose task it is to serve as mediator between us and the light reveals itself in one of the strata of our soul world. Our task in this school is to investigate how this rescuing process comes about and how it works. We have to explore how to promote the faculty of discernment, to unmask imitations, and go straight to the one goal. Therefore, we shall now explore the mystery of the blood. In our fallen microcosm, an ensouling principle reigns that was originally awakened by the light. We call this ensouling principle consciousness. One of the most distinctive qualities of the consciousness we call vibration. The consciousness of the soul being nourishes itself from the soul world. It is driven to manifestation, for which the vibration awakens a great variety of workings. One of the effects of the consciousness vibration is a system of force lines that we immediately recognize as the nervous system, which already shows us the image of the future personality. As soon as this system is established and the consciousness vibration circulates through it, we see a second activity, and a second structure forms, which is closely connected with and similar to the nervous system. It is the future system of blood vessels. In this second system, the same fluid circulates, but in a slower or thicker state. Thus, we see emerge, firstly, the consciousness radiation, secondly, the nerve radiation in the formed nervous system, and thirdly, the blood radiation in the formed blood vessel system. From these three fundamental structural principles related to the systems of force lines, the various forms and conditions of the bodily figure manifest. The skeleton, the muscular system and cell groups of the flesh, as well as the compaction of various organs and parts that are already present in the structures of force lines, such as the head, heart, endocrine glands, and nerve ganglia. This whole system breathes and nourishes itself from the atmosphere of our soul world. It is certain, therefore, that every atmospheric force, every atmospheric influence, will make itself felt in every system. But do take into account that the life conditions of every soul being are no longer equal. Due to the interminably disordered dialectical life divisions, there is no longer any question of a soul life standard. Humanity is totally individualized as to personal soul life needs. Therefore, every soul being differs sharply from all others. The same mysterious influence that we have pointed out several times evokes in humanity an immeasurable desire for a completely equal soul life standard. But through the multiformity of groups and individuals, this desire also comes to expression in multiformity. The delusion we spoke of, that many nations presume to be the coming promised people, brings with it the idea of the promise to live someday in a land of milk and honey, all united, all equal, with equal standards of life understood according to nature, to life in this world. The commune idea, the Bellamy idea, the Judaism concept, the pyramid faith, and so forth, are parodies in the earthly realm of the original soul unity with the universal light, in which every soul possesses equal possibilities, equal values, equal abilities, and the same powers. These ideas and their dialectical manifestations are nature scientific reactions to the Christ impulse intervening atmospherically. When we now compare the completely unequal soul life standard of any being with that of another being, then it is clear that the chaotic situations of our life image must likewise be present in the atmosphere. This is because every soul being feeds itself from the atmosphere and finds there all its personal needs. We now draw your attention especially to this fact. Our blood image shows our immediate momentary state of being. Every cell of our body corresponds with it, and our nervous system and serpent fire, the spinal forces, speak the same language. The fact that our microcosm continues to live proves conclusively that the world powers surrounding us have to be at least of the same kind and quality. This is a startling discovery. When decay is within and around us, there can be no question of a static condition. Something subject to decay will increasingly degenerate and cause continual decay around itself. This natural scientific fact has therefore always caused tremendous cosmic catastrophes, which one must not see as punishments, but as very necessary events to maintain the life wave and prevent catastrophes extending beyond a certain level. The maintenance of a life wave like ours is necessary due to the universal love principle, which must try again and again to lead all that is lost and sunken back to the original splendor. To this end, when blood decay reaches demonic heights, and the life wave persists as in a hellish vortex, the greater part of their microcosmic systems is dismantled, not by a fatal death, but through an intercosmic atomic explosion in which a human being does not die but simply ceases to exist as to the greater part of his microcosm. Such a condition is known as a cosmic night. Later, after a formidable cleansing and a total rebirth of the entire planetary life field, the life wave concerned is set in motion again and led to manifestation to let it find the way to salvation from scratch. There are forces that derive from our life wave that can withdraw from this universal human catastrophe. They can take a distance from it, not because they apply the liberating method, but because they serve themselves through the magic of the exploitation of others. They possess a kind of eternal life, not in the divine and radiant glory of the all manifestation, but in a severe lack of freedom and by causing immeasurable suffering. In our philosophy, we refer to these powers as the dialectical hierarchy. These forces proceed from the assumption that they themselves will be free of their suffering, and humanity will be saved if they can lift the whole human life, wave to their own state of being to their golden, glittering glory. Opposite this hierarchy stands the Christ hierarchy. All universal teachings of all times speak of these two influences in a symbolic and much hidden way. As the sacred language says, the Logos has delivered the world to the Christ. This means the Christ hierarchy is mightier. The Christ hierarchy seizes the world and humanity to save them according to an irresistible plan. At given periods in world history, the whole field is completely neutralized by a cosmic revolution for those who cannot yet be helped, so that by evacuation, also those who have not been saved are withdrawn from the grip of the dialectical hierarchy. When you can somewhat grasp this, it will be clear to you that during the period between two cosmic revolutions, the dialectical hierarchy, by virtue of its essence and striving, will do its utmost to elevate humanity to its own status. It will continue to do so as long as it can still contend for one soul. But as soon as the last soul ascends into the Christ being of the divine reality, the dialectical hierarchy comes to its lawful end. This phase of the human manifestation is also sketched for us in the universal teachings. We had to convey all this to you to create a good basis for further understanding and for the right discernment. At this point in these considerations, we can ask the question, how does the dialectical hierarchy attempt to seize humanity with its ideas? You can answer this yourself. The human soul being has three fundamental principles: consciousness, nerve fluid, and blood. The Christ hierarchy endeavors to exert a liberating effect on this soul being with its mysterious atmospheric impulse. Well, the dialectical hierarchy does precisely the same. through blood purification, through a general blood indoctrination and grip on the blood, it tries to raise humanity to its idea. It tries to succeed before the blood decay has advanced so far that the dialectical hierarchy is doomed to inactivity through a cosmic revolution. In the next chapter, we will discuss in which ways the dialectical hierarchy has throughout the ages undermined the human soul in its fatal distress. Be assured that the purpose of these discussions is not to unsettle you, but to let you see and discern better than ever the lugubrious game actually taking place and the activity of the Divine Redeemer.